नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नास्तप्रायशो भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी. So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, Verse 7. Venasyaveksya munayo Durvritasya vichestitam Vimarsya loka vyasanam Kripayo chusma satrina Vena vyasiksha munayo Durvritasya vichestitam Vimarsya loka vyasanam Kripayochusma satrina Vena vyase vyak Vena vya Venasya viksha munayo Durvitasya vichestitam Vimarsya loka vyasanam Kripayochusma satrina Venasya of King Vena. Avekshya, after observing. Munaya, all the great sages. Durvritasya, of the great rogue. Vichestitam, activities. Vimarsya, considering. Loka Vyasanam, danger of the people in general. Kripaya, out of compassion. Uchahu, talked. Sma, in the past. Satrina, the performers of sacrifices. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. Therefore, all great sages assembled together and after observing cruel Vena's atrocities, concluded that the great danger and catastrophe was approaching the people of the world. Thus, out of compassion, they began to talk amongst themselves, for they themselves were the performers of the sacrifices. Please repeat. Therefore, all the great sages assembled together and after observing cruel Vena's atrocities, concluded that a great danger and catastrophe was approaching the people of the world. Thus, out of compassion, they began to talk amongst themselves, for they themselves were the performer of the sacrifices. Before King Vena was enthroned, all the great sages were very much anxious to see to the welfare of society. When they saw that King Vena was most irresponsible, cruel and atrocious, they again began to think of the welfare of the people. It should be understood that sages, saintly persons and devotees are not unconcerned with the people's welfare. Ordinary karmis are busy acquiring money for sense gratification, and ordinary gnanis are socially aloof when they speculate on liberation. But actually, devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy, both materially Therefore, the great sages began to consult one another on how to get out of the dangerous atmosphere created by King Vena. Om Agnana Timiram Dasya Jnana Anjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tashmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sahajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitantam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishatan Vitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarobhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namo Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare 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 Krishna. So I'll read the translation again. Therefore all the great sages assembled together and after observing cruel Vena's atrocities concluded that the great danger and catastrophe was approaching the people of the world. Thus, out of compassion, they began to talk amongst themselves, for they themselves were the performers of the sacrifices. So, we see it's an interesting pastime here, which we are reading, the story of King Vena. So, to understand the story, we'll quickly do a recap of what has been going on here, and we'll try to extract some points from this pastime. How it has been, how it has come to this conclusion now. So this conversation is going on between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. So Maitreya Muni is trying to explain, like after discussing the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, he is explaining the dynasty, the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. And in it's interesting, after Dhruva Maharaj left, Utkala was Dhruva Maharaj's son, and Utkala was not interested at all in taking on the kingdom of the world. Like, imagine someone has been given power to rule over the whole world. He is like one of the most powerful personality, right? But Utkala was not at all interested. It is mentioned he posed himself and he was completely satisfied. He was completely satisfied, and Paramatma realized he had no interest in engaging in any of the material affairs. As it is mentioned, that he posed himself as a foolish, blind, deaf, dumb and madman. So very interesting point to see. People in material world are trying to pose themselves as most intelligent persons. Generally people don't like to show themselves as foolish personalities. But here Utkala was showing himself as, even though he was very great devotee, he was very advanced in his knowledge, but he posed himself as a foolish person. And we see again and again in Bhagavatam, there has been this pastimes, like especially the pastime of Jad Bharata. Maharaj Bharata took birth as a deer, and then he took birth as Jad Bharata. And he was very intelligent, but he posed himself, and the same lines are mentioned, that when he took birth, he posed himself as a madman, deaf, dumb, foolish person. So we understand people, especially Maharaj Bharata, learned from his past life that he should not entangle in material life. So one has to be materially foolish to advance in spiritual life. Not actually foolish, but he does not have to show himself as very intelligent or intellectual or engaged in the material affairs intellectually. So even though he has all the knowledge, he is very intelligent, but still materially he should not pose himself as very intelligent and try to, as we see in material life, we have to climb the ladder of in career life. We have to show ourselves as we are the most intelligent. Only then we can go up to the ladder. Otherwise, we will be, if you show your boss that you are the most foolish, you will be thrown out. But one, it is mentioned, one has to just do bare minimum required to get his job done and to survive in the material life. But one should not over endeavor. It's mentioned by Rupa Goswami, right, in verse 2, Atyahara Prayasasya Prajalpo Niyamagara Janasangasya Loyamcha Sadbir Bhaktir Vinashati. So one should not Atyahara, one should not eat more than required or over accumulate. Prayasasya, one should not over endeavor for things which are very difficult to obtain. So these are the points we have to understand. One should not pose himself materially very advanced to in our spiritual life. It is not good for our spiritual life. And also we see the second pastime which is given is of Maharaj Rishabhdev. Maharaj Rishabhdev, and it's interesting, it's in the same canto where Maharaj Rishabhdev was the father of Bharat Maharaj. And Maharaj Rishabhdev was the ruler of the whole world. But what did he do? He renounced his kingdom. And after renouncing his kingdom, he just... I'll just read from 5th canto, it is mentioned. After accepting the feature of Avdhuta, the great saintly person, without material cares, Lord Rishabhdev passed through human society like a blind, deaf and dumb man, an idle stone, a ghost or a madman. Actually, people called him such names. He remained silent and did not speak to anyone. So this is Maharaj Rishabhdev, who is the incarnation of Lord. He posed himself as a madman, even though he had all the knowledge, past, present and future. He was Trikalpnani. He had all the knowledge possible, but he's God incarnation himself, but he still posed himself as a madman. So he's showing by his example, Rishabhdev is showing by his example, one should be detached. One should not try to show himself as materially very intellectual, because it just destroys your bhakti. So this is very important part. So we see Utkala posed himself as a madman. He was not interested. He just renounced the kingdom. So in this pastime that we are discussing, his younger brother Vatsara was made the king, and then his dynasty has been explained. So in that dynasty, we see there was a description of Maharaj Anga and Queen Sunita. So Maitreya Muni quickly explains the pastime of Maharaj Anga and Sunita, how they had a child whose name was King Vena, and he was very notorious. He was a rascal right from his birth. So Maharaj Anga, becoming frustrated, he left the kingdom and he renounced the kingdom. And then Vidura asked, like, how come? So this is a natural tendency for a devotee to understand how things are working, and how come such a great king as Maharaj Anga had such a crooked son like King Vena. And it is also mentioned there that the sages had to curse King Vena and kill him, and with the hand of King Vena's body they churned it, and Lord incarnated as Maharaj Prithu. So Vidura became more interested in knowing, like, how come this King Vena was born to such a saintly king. So and how come, the second question Vidura asked is, how come the sages killed King Vena, who was the emperor of the world? Usually the emperor or the kings are respected as the Lord themselves. They are not to be killed by Brahmanas. But here, like, Brahmanas cursed the king, emperor of the world, and killed them. So again, there is a narration of the pastime of Samik Rishi, where how Parikshit Maharaj was cursed by the son of Samik Rishi, Sringi. And at that time, Samik Rishi condemned his son. He said, like, what you have done is not appropriate. He rejected the curse which was given by Sringi. And he said, by such a curse, actually the leader should be respected as God. And even if he does some mistake, he should still be honored. Especially if the mistake is not so significant. And he said, like, when the leader Raj Rishi is gone, the world is filled with thieves. And if there is a leader, and we know Maharaj Parikshit was a very powerful king. Maharaj Parikshit was able to stop Kali from entering, and Swami Krishna knew that, and that is why he condemned his son Sringi, that you shouldn't have done this. He said, it's interesting what Swami Krishna mentioned. He said, due to termination of the monarchical regime and the plundering of the people's wealth by the rogues and thieves, there will be great social disruption. And people will be killed and injured, and animals and women will be stolen. And for all these sins, we Brahmanas shall be responsible. So it's interesting, when the Brahmana class falls down, the social structure falls down. And when the social structure falls down, the thieves and rogues are prominent. They are present everywhere, and they indulge in all these activities, illicit activities. So it is very important to have the Brahmana class, which is, and that is the objective of ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada mentions, by all this sastra, by all this study, we are trying to create the class of Brahmanas. Because when the Brahmanas are capable of leading the society flourishes, the social structure is in place. And also it is interesting, Swami Krishna mentions, at that time the people in general will fall systematically from the path of progressive civilization in respect to the qualities and qualitative engagement of the caste and order of the society and the Vedic injunction. Thus they will be more attracted to economic development for sense gratification, and as the result there will be unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. So since Prabhupada is also mentioning here, like the materialistic people would be only engaged in sense gratification. So similarly, the people here, Swami Krishna is predicting here, like when Brahmana class falls down and there is no ruler, people are just engaged in social activities, in economic development and sense gratification. So it is very important to have the Brahmana class, and it is very important to have a leader who is powerful enough to lead the society, and the Brahmana class to lead the drive the leaders of the society. So then Maitreya Muni explains, because Vidura asked these questions, Maitreya Muni explains the pastime of Maharaj Anga, and he says Maharaj Anga was the pious son, a pious king, but he did not have a son. It's interesting to know this. In our material life, there are some things which we get easily, and there are some things which we don't get. Again, this verse is important to understand. Atehara prayasascha. Prayasascha is very important. That if there is something which we are not destined to get, we should not over-endeavor for that. There is a very interesting verse in the first verse of Ishopanishad. This says, Ishavashim idam sarvam yat kincha jagadyam jagat tena tyaktena bunjida magrada kashya svidhanam. One should understand what is quota. One should accept whatever is in his quota. And one should not over-endeavor or accept knowing to whom it belongs. So everything, Ishavashim idam sarvam, everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So one should only accept for his quota. One should not over-endeavor. So again we see in this pastime, what did Maharaj Anga do? He did not have a son, so he was lamenting. He was thinking how to get this son. He was not destined to get son. And we see the similar pastime which happened in the life of Maharaj Chitraketu. Maharaj Chitraketu did not have a son. It is mentioned he had hundreds and thousands of wives, but he did not have a son from those wives. He was potent, it is explained in that pastime. He was very potent, he was healthy, he was the emperor of the world. He had beautiful queens, but still he couldn't have a son from them. And he was lamenting day and night. And when Angira Muni came to see him, he explained like his mental situation, that because of not having the son, he's repenting. And Angira Muni could have instructed him at that time, the philosophy like, it's not in your destiny, you should not endeavor for it. But because of the lamentation of Maharaj Chitraketu was so strong, He could have not understood. So what did Angira Muni do? He gave him a benediction. He said, okay, I'll give you a sweet rice. He prepared some sweet rice and said, you give this to your wife and you will have a son. So Mara Chitraketu gave the sweet rice to one of his wife and the son was born. But before leaving, Angira Muni told that this son will be the cause of happiness as well as the cause of distress. And then left. So interestingly, the son was born, but again, we all know the pastime. Mara Chitraketu was too much attached to the son and the wife who had that son, and he neglected all the other wives. And because of that, the other wives poisoned the son. And at that moment, son died, and everyone, like the wife, Mara Chitraketu, and the whole kingdom was in grief. They were lamenting. They were not able to look after themselves. They were continuously lamenting. So at that moment, Maharaj Angira Muni and Narad Muni came back to the kingdom to instruct Maharaj Chitraketu. And then they instructed. And it's interesting, Narad Muni brought the son back. And the son spoke to Maharaj Chitraketu and everyone present there. Like, I have taken so many births. I have taken birth in the animal kingdom. I have taken birth in the vegetable plant kingdom. I have taken birth in as a demigods. So who are this father and mother? In which life you are my father and mother? And that Mara Chitraketu could understand that we all are continuously dying, and then he renounced the kingdom. So this is an interesting pastime. So one should not over endeavor for something which he is not destined to get. And if one does that, it will only cause him more and more misery. It's not going to give him any fruits. So this is, and we see this exactly happening in this pastime, where King Anga was trying to get this, creating this, he organized this Ashwamedha Yajna to get a son. And what happened? None of the demigods even came to take the oblations. They did not even appear because of that sacrifice. Usually in those days, the brahmanas were so powerful, the kings were so powerful, and the motive was pious. So demigods used to immediately come and take oblations of the fires. When the sacrifice was made, the demigods used to take their share, used to appear. But in this sacrifice, the great Ashwamedha Yajna, demigods did not appear. So Maharaj Anga is being a gentle devotional king. He asked the brahmanas, have I done anything wrong? And the brahmanas told Maharaj Anga, in this life we cannot see you have done anything wrong. You are such a pious king and you have been ruling so righteously. You couldn't have done anything wrong, but it could be because of your past sins from past life that you are not getting a son and the demigods are not appearing. So they instructed Maharaj Anga to perform a sacrifice and give oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead because He is most merciful. So this is another point we have to understand. Akamo sarva kama va moksha kama udadi tivrena bhakti yogena yajita purusham param. Even though we have got akamo, we don't have any desire for any material desire, or sarva kama, or we have got all the material desires, or we have got desire for liberation, we should still worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Supreme Lord is so merciful. And when we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, He awards us benediction in such a way that we do not hanker for it anymore. It purifies our desire. So it's interesting that the Brahmanas advised Maharaj Anga to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as soon as Maharaj Anga offered oblations for Lord Vishnu, the Lord Vishnu immediately appeared from fire and gave him a benediction that he will have a son. Again, with a pot in his hand, Lord gave him the sweet rice and Maharaj Anga gave it to his wife and the son was born. So, what happens when the son was born? The son was born, he was crooked right from his childhood. And even though he got what he wanted, he was not happy with it. Because the son was so crooked that he used to kill all the animals. He used to go to forest and kill animals mercilessly. Not only kill animals, but when he used to go and play with the friends, he used to kill his friends as well, like animals. So it's a very dangerous situation. Nobody would play with such a person, right? And imagine the situation of a father when he has got a son who is such a cruel son. So it is explained that Maharaj Anga was tried to rectify this situation by punishing the son, but he couldn't change the behavior of the son. So ultimately he decided that he should renounce the kingdom. He's saying it is better to not have a son. And people who are fortunate, they would not have a son, especially the bad son. So he's saying it is they are fortunate if they don't have a bad son. And also he mentions, like, in fact, he's praising, he's seeing the mercy of the Lord in this situation, which is again the quality of a devotee. In any situation, whether they are in a good situation or bad situation, they always see the mercy of the Lord. So Maharaj Anga is also seeing the mercy of the Lord, how Lord has been mercifully given him a son who is of bad character, so that it's easy for him to detach himself from the material kingdom, material world. So Maharaj Anga renounced this kingdom and left. One night he just left the kingdom, detached from his wife and son, and he just left home and he did not appear again. So at that point, it's interesting, now there was no person to rule the kingdom. So what did the Brahmanas do? They saw that somebody has to be installed on the kingdom. So they had King Vena as the emperor. Because one advantage of having a irreligious or corrupt king is all the rugs and thieves, they ran away because of fear of King Vena. Because he was so cruel that even the rugs and thieves were afraid of him. They thought, like, if they are caught, this cruel king will just kill them. So they disappeared. But again, because the king was so cruel that he stopped all the sacrifices. He stopped all the worship of the Lord. So Brahmanas were not happy. The sages were not happy. With this behavior. So it's interesting, in that section it is mentioned how the Varnasram system was in place, where in the Varnasram system, right from childhood, renunciation is given priority. Like, one has to learn renunciation. Like, the first, in the different ashramas, we see the first ashram is Brahmachari ashram. In the Brahmachari ashram, the main principle that is taught is one should study the scriptures. So in Brahmachari ashram, the kids or the children are renouncing the playing, because usually kids like to play, but when they are in Brahmachari ashram, they renounce the playing and they are engaged in sastric study. And then the second ashram is Grihastha ashram. It's not necessary every Brahmachari has to go through Grihastha ashram. You can avoid the misery by going into Vanaprastha or Sannyas ashram. But people who are in Grihastha ashram, it's not like it's not so bad also. Sometimes it's good, as we see Maharaj Vena explains, like, it is good to have a bad son. So sometimes it is good to be in a Grihastha ashram also. But in Grihastha ashram, one learns the renunciation of his wealth, because the Grihastha earns very hard, works very hard to earn his living, and then by the act of charity he purifies that eye. So he renounces his wealth. So he learns renunciation in that way. And then in Vanaprastha ashram, when a Grihastha has finished his working life, he is now wealthy enough or satisfied enough, and what he can do is he can live comfortably, but he renounces that comfort and he travels to different holy places with whatever little possessions he can take. Usually when we travel, there is a good thing about going on a pilgrimage. So we should do that regularly. Because when you go to pilgrimage, usually when you are at home, you've got all this paraphernalia full of stuff. But when you go in on a pilgrimage, you don't take the whole house with you. What you take is only mercy of airlines. They only give you 20-30 kgs, right? So you only take that much which is completely necessary, which is required, basic necessity. You don't travel with your whole paraphernalia. So it is important that we should go on pilgrimage regularly, so that we know like this is the only thing which is required. So Vanaprastha ashram renounces comfort and then goes on pilgrimage, and sannyas ashram or sannyasis renounce everything. They are completely dependent on the Supreme Lord for their necessities. So we see the varnashram system, it is very important how different ashramas teach us renunciation and ultimately bring us to this point of completely being dependent on the Lord. So, and also in Bhagavatam, again and again we see all these kings who are very wealthy kings, who are opulent kings. But what did they do in the end? They renounced. They renounced everything. And this is the point which has been taught in Bhagavatam again and again, and Prabhupada emphasizes on this point. We should have this cultivation of renunciation and always have think about how we can come to the stage of complete renunciation. So Maharaj Anga, one night he renounced the kingdom when his son, wife and all the residents were sleeping, and he left for forest. And then it is mentioned that after that, when the Brahmanas enthroned King Vena as a king, he became very powerful. And it was difficult for anyone to change his behavior, because he became, this is another point we have to understand, like with power and wealth comes pride. So when one becomes very powerful or when one becomes very wealthy, pride enters into his heart. So people who are especially in Grahastha ashram, we should be very careful of this point. Like when we become wealthy or powerful, we should always check this, that pride is not entering in our heart. So this is what exactly happened with King Vena, and he was very cruel to all the citizens. And at that point we come to this verse where the devotees of the Lord, the sages, the saintly persons are always concerned about the welfare of the people, and they are compassionate. We sing every morning, we sing this prayer, Vancha Kalpa Taro Vesha Kripa Sindhu Bhayavacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. These devotees of the Lord are compassionate to all the living entities, and they are like desire, they can fulfill the desires of everyone. So this compassion is the quality of a Vaishnava. So we see here these Vaishnavas, the sadhus and saints, are concerned about the welfare of the people. So they killed this king Vena, and it is mentioned there are different, and Prabhupada here mentions three class of people. The first class of people he is mentioning is the general sages and devotees who are always anxious to see the welfare of the society. The second class of people Prabhupada mentions are the karmis, who are always busy acquiring money for sense gratification. And the third class of people Prabhupada mentions is the gnanis, who are socially aloof when they speculate on liberation. So different classes of people are mentioned. And it's interesting, in the 13th chapter, Prabhupada mentions how different people are having different consciousness. The basic consciousness is Annamaya. Annamaya is... That's right. Annamaya is food conscious. When a child is born, his consciousness is only give me food, fill my belly. So this is the lowest of the consciousness. People are just concerned about food, Annamaya. And the higher than that, Prabhupada mentioned is Pranamaya. Pranamaya is slightly advanced than Annamaya consciousness, where person is not only concerned about food, but person is concerned about himself also. He understands that he is living. is just not like dependent on food. So this is little bit higher consciousness where he is concerned about, he understands there is living and non-living. That's pranamaya. Above that is jnanamaya. So jnanamaya is where he is having the realization of thinking, feeling and willing. He understands that there is something called brain. He uses his mind. Intelligence is used. So that is above pranamaya, where he understands jnanamaya. And then above jnanamaya is vijnanamaya. Vijnanamaya is where he is understanding, he has got a realization of living entities. And he understands how everything is working. He becomes more realized in his intelligence. So that is vijnanamaya. And above that, Prabhupada explains is anandamaya, which is the stage of a devotee. So Prabhupada explains in that chapter how in anandamaya a devotee is experiencing bliss and he looks for the welfare of the people in general. So Prabhupada has explained in the purport, like the devotees are not only concerned about the spiritual but also materially. They make sure, Prabhupada explains, actually devotees and saintly persons are always anxious to see how the people can be made happy both materially and spiritually. So they are not just giving advice, you are not the body, you are spirit soul, but they are also concerned how they can progress both materially and spiritually. So this is the quality of a devotee. And somehow the devotee is always, it is interesting, in the fifth canto the demigods are praying. The demigods are praying that let us take birth on this earth planet. Because when a person is too happy or too miserable, he cannot perform devotional service. One needs to have a right balance of happiness and distress. So when the demigods are in the heavenly planets, they are enjoying too much. There is all opulence. They have got the body which is never getting old, never diseased. So they are enjoying too much. So they are not able to perform devotional service. And people who are really miserable, they also cannot perform devotional service. So there has to be right balance of happiness and distress to perform devotional service. So these demigods are praying, let us take birth into the earth planet where there is right amount of misery and happiness. And especially it is mentioned, Kaler Dosha Nidhe Rajan Asti Hiye Kumahan Guna Kirtana Devasha Krishna Sha Mukta Sangat Param Rajet. So in this Kaler Dosha, which is in Kali Yuga, which is full of faults, there is one good quality. Just by chanting the holy names, one can become liberated, one can become Mukta Sangat Param Rajet. One can go back home, back to Godhead. So the process in Kali Yuga on this planet is so easy that the demigods are also praying, let us take birth in this Yuga right now, where Mahaprabhu has appeared, where Krishna had appeared, so that they can, just by chanting, they can get liberation. So this is the process, how one can be. So the point is here is, one has to be both materially satisfied as well as spiritually advancing in our life, so that we can perform devotional service appropriately. So I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes. You said that like the sages are not supposed to kill the king of the emperor because he's as good as God.
That's right. It is mentioned like the king is a representative of God. The king in those days were Raja Rishis. Raja Rishis means they were as good as the Rishis. So the sages were not allowed, wouldn't kill the emperor. They would see the order of the king as order of the God. He is God's representative. So that is why they never used to kill. So again, in this example, we see Maharaj, King Vena was not like that. In fact, he was on the opposite side. He was stopping all the sacrifices. He was disturbing. And we see from past times, like Ravana was like that. Hiranyakashipu was like that. So when such a king appears, Lord arranges for such a king to be killed. So such king can be killed, but usually the kings are representative of God. They are Rajarishis, so they shouldn't be killed, or their order shouldn't be disobeyed. Any other questions, comments? Okay, we'll stop here then. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.